into sudden wide blue sky at the top of the hill. The space was quite small and flat. The tower was only some yards away, and it was indeed a church tower without a church. There were two open, church-like archways in it at the bottom. Vivian could see sky right through it for a second, before Jonathan blocked her view by springing upright and sprinting for the tower.
"Stop that!"
he yelled. His cap fell off and his pigtail flayed as he ran. Vivian pelted after him. She had had just a glimpse of something going on inside the tower, low down on the floor. And she knew that was what the man with the hat had been shouting about. Jonathan flung himself through the archway. Vivian hurtled after him. Over his shoulder, she saw a small figure in grey flannel crouched over a hole in the tower floor, and a mound of broken stone and loose earth beside that, with a spade stuck in it. The boy looked up as they came. He was fair. His thin face glared like a cornered animal's. Then his thin hands dived for the earthy hole in front of him, found something, wrenched at it, and pulled it free. It looked like a rusty iron box. Jonathan pounced for it and tried to drag it out of the boy's hands. But the boy was up, quick as a flash, and running out through the opposite archway with the box under his arm. Jonathan stumbled forward. Vivian dodged round him, past a clear sight of Jonathan's glasses falling into the hole, and Jonathan's stumbling foot coming down on top of the glasses, and raced after the boy.
"Sam!" she shrieked. "Stop him!"
The boy was running down the other side of the hill, his thin legs flying under his grey shorts. Sam came round the tower with his face crimson, and both sets of bootlaces flapping loose, and pounded across the hill to cut the boy off. Sam should have caught the boy, and Vivian would have arrived an instant later to help. But the boy was no longer there. By the time Vivian converged with Sam, there was only bare green slope, where there had just before been a boy running away. One of Sam's bootlaces whipped itself around his ankles, and he fell on his face, breathing like someone sawing wood.
"I may be dying," he gasped.
"But where did he go?"
Vivian said, quite bewildered. She looked round. There was no sign the boy had ever been there, nor was there any sign of the man who had run past them shouting. And that was quite as puzzling now that she thought about it. The only other person in sight was Jonathan, coming slowly and fumblingly down the hill. Jonathan looked white and wretched.
"Why did I have to shout?" he said. "He hadn't seen us. I could have got there in time to save that polarity, if I'd only held my tongue."
"What do you mean?" said Vivian.
"The thing he stole," Jonathan said. "It was one of Faber John's polarities, the things that keep Time City in place. I know it was, I can feel it. And now he's stolen it and gone time-travelling with it, messing up history for 10 centuries to come, and it's all my fault."
Vivian would have liked to say that this was nonsense. There was not a scrap of proof of what Jonathan said. But there was no doubt that the boy had stolen something from the tower, and she could feel that something important had gone from the tour. It was suddenly a much duller place. Mist was forming down near the bottom of the hill, and though the evening light was red on the lowland all around, it was a melancholy and final sort of light. From somewhere in the distance, an air raid siren began to howl. Vivian shivered and took hold of Sam to pull him up.
"Let's go back to Time City," she said.
But Jonathan said at the same moment,
"We've got to go after him."
He was carrying the egg control in the box on his shoulder, and the egg obeyed him instantly. It was suddenly afternoon again. Sam was now lying on his face in a road. But the air felt different, heavier and more dusty. But the houses lining the road were not very different from the ones Vivian had known all her life. Apart from one or two new yellow ones, they were the sort of houses that lined the main roads out of London, and had probably been built about the time she was born. But they had been cared for since with bright white paint to a smartness Vivian had never seen in houses before. The only obviously future thing was a giant silver building, standing smoking quietly out near the horizon.
"I think we've moved about 100 years, she said.
Somehow, she was rather more awed to be in 2039 than she had been to be in Time City.
"Yes, but I've lost those stupid glasses," Jonathan said. "Is the boy here?"
"There,"
said Sam, waving his boots about in an effort to get untangled. The boy was walking away from them, up the road with the box still under his arm. His clothes had changed. He was now in wide trousers that were either too long or too short, depending whether you thought they were shorts or not, and his jacket had immense gathered sleeves. As Vivian looked and Jonathan peered at him, the boy sensed they were there. He jerked and looked over his shoulder. The thin face stared angrily back at them. Then he was gone again.
"I can't see him," said Jonathan.
Sam struggled to his knees.
"Gone again," he said. "He's probably got one of those egg things too."
A roaring, which they had been hearing without truly noticing, came suddenly louder out of the distance and swept up to them, where it settled to a dull drumming. Before Jonathan could suggest following the boy again, they were surrounded by 6 things a bit like motorcycles. 6 men in wide-sleeved uniforms sat on the cycles, looking jeering and grim.
"North Circular Vigilante Group 7, one of them announced. "What are you folk doing, going round dressed like that?"
Vivian uncomfortably realized that nearly all the buttons on her cardigan had burst off, and that one of her pajama legs had fallen down from its garter under her skirt. Another of the 6 men produced a board with a form clipped to it.
"Unseemly clothing," he said,
leaning back in his saddle and ticking off squares on the form.
"Disturbing the peace? Littering?"
He looked at Sam's cap, which had fallen off beside him.
"Failure to wash?"
he said, looking from the blackberry stains round Sam's mouth to Vivian's muddy hands.
"Not from around here, are they? That makes unauthorized travel, vagrancy too. This is going to earn them a right good whipping,"
one of the other men said, obviously liking the idea very much.
12 strokes each already."
"Jonathan," said Vivian.
"Truancy from school, that's obvious," said the man with the form. "Lying down in a public road. Think they've stolen anything?"
"Use that egg, you fool,"
Sam bellowed, rolling round in the road and grabbing Vivian's ankle as he tried to get up.
"Abusive language," said the man, ticking another square.
18 strokes,
said the other man, even more pleased.
"Time lock,"
Jonathan said desperately.
"Time City! Time lock! Oh, why won't it—"
The egg worked at last, in a slow, heavy, swirling way. They seemed to be dragged away backwards, a long, long distance, and then hung there. Vivian had time to think that only the accident that she had grabbed the Jonathan for balance when Sam took hold of her ankle had caused the egg to take all three of them. Then she had time to wonder if the egg was working at all. And at last they were in pitchy darkness. Jonathan, after furious fumbling, found the flashlight in his pocket and switched it on. The light seemed weak and yellow after the open street, but it showed the massive stones and the glimmering slate of the time lock. They all sighed with relief.
"That was frightening," Sam said, still on the floor.
"What went wrong?"
"The egg wouldn't work at all at first," Jonathan said. "Maybe it's too old and worn out. Maybe we asked it to do too much." He put it carefully back in its hollow. "Now I don't know what to do," he said dejectedly.
"What time is it?"
asked Vivian. Jonathan fumbled again and found the clock stud on his belt. He stared at the green glowing dial on his hand.
12:42. No, that can't be right. I don't know. I've no idea what time we've come back to."
"That picnic," said Sam.
He wrenched off his tangled boots and began tearing off the rest of his disguise. The other two pulled off their things in an equal hurry. Vivian was so alarmed at what Jenny might be thinking that she was ready first. Mum hated to be kept waiting. Jenny was probably the same. Vivian rushed in front up the staircase and was first out into the passage. All she could think of was the uproar there was bound to be if it was really nearly 1 o'clock. She left Jonathan to swing the false door back and ran up the passage. She barged through the chained door. It was lucky that Jonathan had oiled the door. Elio was standing only a few yards away, straightening an exhibit in one of the showcases. He had not seen Vivian. She had made barely a sound coming through the door. She had the presence of mind to catch hold of the chain before it could rattle as the door swung, and ease the door shut behind her. If she stayed there, she could stop Sam and Jonathan barging through behind her. But Elio was bound to wonder if he saw her. And if he realized what they were doing, he would tell. Jonathan had said so. Elio started to turn round. Chapter 7. The River Time. Vivian took 3 giant strides until she was more or less level with Elio.
Hello?
She said. Elio finished turning round with astonishing speed.
"Hello, miss. You walk very quietly. I failed to hear you approach."
"You were busy with your museum," Vivian said. "That's why you didn't hear me."
"True," said Elio.
He looked back at the display case in a dissatisfied way. It was labelled 73 Century Mountain Boots, and in brackets, Mars. And Vivian supposed that you could just tell that the things inside were boots.
"Would you say these were shown to advantage?"
he asked.
"They tell me I have very little artistic sense."
"I think," Vivian said, "that they may be the kind of things that never look right. We had bathroom curtains like that."
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the chained door move. Sam's face came round it and vanished again in a hurry.
"By the way, do you know the time?"
she said. Elio turned to her contritely. Luckily, the door was shut by then.
"Of course. You have no belt yet. I will get you one for tomorrow, miss, I promised."
He pressed one stud out of several dozen on his own belt, and a clock face lit up on his wrist. It looked much more complicated than Jonathan's.
10:46 and 10 seconds, he said.
Thank goodness, Vivian thought. We're in time for the picnic after all. At least, she realized, they would be, if only Sam and Jonathan could get out of the passage without Elio seeing them. The only thing to do seemed to keep Elio distracted somehow. She smiled at him. She said.
I've heard people call you an android, Mr. Elio. What is an android, please?
It means that I am a manufactured human being, Elio said.
What? Made in a factory?
Vivian exclaimed, truly surprised.
Not quite a factory. It was more like a highly equipped laboratory, said Elio. I was assembled from human protoplasm by scientists working at a bench.
All the Frankenstein films she had seen flooded into Vivian's mind. She gave Elio a wary look. He seemed like an ordinary person, only rather smaller and paler than most. Nevertheless, she would have gone away quickly if she had had any choice. But she seemed to have got him talking, so she moved gently down the gallery towards the hall.
Did it hurt at all? She asked.
I was not conscious for much of the process, said Elio.
He took a step along the gallery with Vivian. But he turned back almost at once and frowned at his showcase.
Perhaps I should move the boots a half turn to the right.
If you do that, the red bits at the top won't show, Vivian said.
She took another step down the gallery.
You have a point,
Elio said, still staring at the boots. It was maddening. He seemed to be stuck in front of them.
What did they make you for?
Vivian asked rather desperately.
An experiment?
No, for efficiency, Elio said. I am stronger and faster than a born human. I live longer and I need less sleep. My bones do not break so easily.
He turned towards her. Vivian thought he might be moving at last. She sidled a few more steps towards the hall. Elio took a step in the same direction.
And, of course, my brain is the best part of me, he said. I have twice the intelligence of a born human, and 5 times the memory. Thus I am acutely observant. But,
to Vivian's exasperation, he turned back to the showcase. He frowned.
This does not make up for the finer points of human taste, he said. What if I turned the boots completely around?
In the passage, Sam and Jonathan were clearly getting impatient. Vivian had a glimpse of the door shutting hurriedly again, and of Jonathan's pigtail caught dangling over the chain.
But I have taste, she said. The boots look very nice. Do you eat the same things as born humans, Mr. Elio?
I live mostly on liquids, said Elio, though I am partial to fruit.
And,
said Vivian,
and,
she walked on a few steps. This time Elio came with her.
And,
she racked her brains for more things to ask.
And were you the only one they made, or were there more of you?
They made about 100,
Elio said, walking slowly beside her.
It was a very costly process, and no more could be afforded.
Where are all the others?
Vivian asked.
Where are all the other androids?
Vivian asked. Now they were really walking towards the hall, but awfully slowly.
They were sent out, said Elio, to help colonize the stars eventually. That is what we were designed for. I am from 105 century, you see, when mankind spreads through the galaxy and mostly departs from Earth. But I was ordered by Time City as a rarity of history. Time City collects one of every rarity, this being a policy begun by Faber John.
You must be awfully lonely,
Vivian said. She was beginning to feel mean, pretending to be so interested in Elia.
Don't you miss all the other androids?
Not at all, said Elio. The only time I met another android, I became extremely irritated with the creature. I confess, I wished to hit it in the face. It is the one occasion on which I have felt those strong emotions that you born humans seem to feel all the time.
Don't you feel anything?
Vivian asked. By now they were walking briskly, and they were nearly at the corner into the hall.
Don't you even feel happy?
No, but neither do I feel sad,
Elio said.
Amusement I do feel, and much contentment. The alarms and fusses of generations of born humans keep me entertained all the time.
They turned the corner into the hall, onto sunlight lying in patterns on the patterned marble. Vivian sighed with relief, but she was finding Elio much more interesting than she expected.
How long have you been in Time City?
100 years come next year,
Elio said.
But you don't look anything like that old,
Vivian exclaimed.
I told you.
Elio began, but he was interrupted by Sempiterne Walker rushing down the stairs in a long blue robe.
Elio, for great Cronus' sake,
Sempiterne Walker called out.
Will you stop messing with that museum of yours for a minute? I've a session of Privy Chronologue in 5 minutes, and you haven't given me my notes for it yet.
They are all ready in the study, sir, Elio said. If you will come with me.
But before he went away with the Sempiterne, he said to Vivian,
I told you I was designed for endurance, as well as efficiency.
This caused Jonathan's father to give Vivian a look, as if she was the last straw, and hurry Elio away. Vivian was left perversely wishing she could have talked to Elio for much longer. Jonathan and Sam shot round the corner, looking hot, tired, and relieved.
Phew,
said Sam.
I thought we were going to be stuck in that passage all day,
Jonathan said.
What's the time?
Just before 11, said Vivian. Isn't that lucky?
They agreed that it was.
I need a drink, said Sam. That warty woman never gave me anything.
Jonathan took them to the matutinal, where there was a gadget on the wall which gave out cups of fruit juice. Sam drank three. Vivian and Jonathan each had two. They were sucking up the last drops when Jenny hurried in.
I thought you said you'd be in the hall,
she said.
Hurry up, Ramona's waiting.
Vivian never had a chance to ask who Ramona was. She turned out to be Sam's mother. She was paler and wider and sleepier looking than her sister Jenny. She was carrying two bird cages like the one Sam had left hidden in the time lock, with interesting shaped foods floating under them. She smiled at Vivian.
You were the image of our brother Viv when I saw you last, Ramona said.
Funny how children change.
Burp, said Sam. It was the natural result of drinking 3 cups of fruit juice without pausing to breathe, but it luckily turned everyone's attention off Vivian and onto Sam.
What has he done to his hair?
Said Jenny. Sam's hand and everyone's eyes went to the top of his head, where his hair still stood in a tuft with Vivian's rubber band around it.
I want to look like my Uncle Ranjit,
he said.
It suits me.
No, it doesn't. Take it down, said Ramona, and added without looking, and tie up your shoes.
Mothers ought to be sent out into history, said Sam.
His own time in history had put him in a very bad mood. He stumped in the rear, muttering crossly to himself, while they crossed Time Close into Eon Square and took a short cut past the great glass building, down some steps to the Avenue of the Four Ages. Ramona led the way across the avenue to one of the archways in the wall.
We thought we'd take a boat, she said.
Sam cheered up at once. He raced ahead through the archway and down the dizzily long flights of steps to the wharf. When the others got to the steps, he was already sitting in a ragged thing floating on the river beside the wharf. There was a line of the things, all different colours. Vivian supposed they were boats, but they looked more like cars to her. That put her in mind of a strange fact about Time City.
You don't have cars here,
she said. Jonathan was clearly thinking about something else.
We don't need them, he said vaguely.
They went down and settled into the comfortable, squashy seats aboard the boat Sam had chosen.
Red's my favourite colour, he told Vivian.
The boat spoke in a rattling voice from under the floor.
Where to, passengers?
It said. It made Vivian jump.
All day higher, main locks first, said Jenny.
I want a transmog for me.
Transmoging seemed to mean that the roof suddenly vanished, which made Vivian jump again. Cool winds blew in her hair as the boat made a wide half-circle out into the middle of the river and set off, with the faintest of rattling sounds, away from Time City. Vivian soon began to enjoy herself as much as Sam. The day was warm, though nothing like as hot as that day in 1939, and the sky was blue. The flatlands sliding past were green with new crops. There were houses at intervals in the fields, all kinds from thatched cottages to one built mostly of shimmering nothingness. And orchards. Orchards, orchards, loaded with white and pink blossom.
It's spring here, Vivian exclaimed.
Yes, we keep the seasons, Jenny said. It must seem strange to you. Wasn't it autumn when you left the 20th century?
Vivian nodded, thinking of the blackberries still staining Sam's face from the lane by the tor. She saw a machine in the distance, rushing across a field, spraying out a white cloud of something. She turned to Jonathan to say that Time City did have cars of a sort, but Jonathan had his head together with Sam's. Sam, after 5 minutes of bouncing about, shouting how much he was enjoying himself, was busy taking Jonathan's belt to pieces to put the clock function right, and seemed to have forgotten he was on a boat at all.
"What's wrong with it?"
asked Jenny.
"A faulty consistor connection,"
Jonathan answered glibly. It seemed amazing to Vivian that neither of the mothers put the stains round Sam's mouth together with the fact that Jonathan's belt was showing the wrong time and realised where they had been. But they didn't. Ramona said placidly and rather proudly,
"Oh, Sam can mend that easily."
Meanwhile, the boat surged steadily round bend after bend of Time River, missing other boats as if it could see them. They passed and missed other boats like their own, small barges, rafts where people were fishing, and a huge pleasure boat full of tourists who all waved. After that came a boat huger still, making waves that piled up along both banks. It was a large barge, as high as a house and nearly as long as a football pitch, with men in strange hats on top who waved too.
"There goes meat from 42 century," said Ramona.
"All that?" said Vivian. "Who pays for it?"
"We all do," said Jenny. "Time City trades in exchange. Only what we trade is knowledge, Vivian. There are records in perpetuum, erstwhile, age-long, and such like, of most things the human race has ever known or done. Students come to study here. And anything anyone in history wants to know, we can tell them for a fee, provided it's something from before the date they ask, of course."
"Oh, we stretch a point sometimes, Jenny," Ramona said. "My department gives weather forecasts, remember?"